Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Back with us, the state comptroller of New York, Tom DiNapoli, a Democrat and a heck of a nice guy. I mean, he responds, he listens, he tells us what's going on financially. And you know what? He comes and joins us whenever we ask. Welcome back to the Capital Connection.
It's been a while, David. I'm glad to be back. And you're even nicer than me. So that's why I'm happy to be back on with you.
Yeah, well, don't talk to my wife about that. Okay, Tom? I don't know that that's actually the case, but you have a pretty good track record there. Well, let's put it this way. We have, as you and I talked about last time, nothing has changed. In fact, it's probably gotten worse, which is this wholesale cutting in the federal government and its impact on New York. So obviously, let's start with the budget. You know, it was a $254 billion. Budget. Where are we in terms of the money to run New York State?
Well, you know, let me answer it a couple of ways. I mean, the first way is to say that the good news is that the tax revenue, as we, you know, because as you know, every month we do our what we call our cash report, right? What's the revenue and the spending for the state? And in our most recent cash report, the tax collections are coming in higher than projected, and you know, significantly higher, you know, over $950 million higher than projections. So this budget, at least as far as the revenue picture, right? Because it's always important to keep in mind a budget is a spending plan, and it's backed up by revenue projections, right? So the good news is the projections are not only holding up; we're actually exceeding the projections. The bad news is, or the challenging news, is that as the changes that are being brought on by Washington start to take effect, it's going to have a negative impact beginning in this year's budget. So, for instance, on the healthcare side, that's been a very unfortunate area that the Trump agenda has targeted. You know, we're talking about in the current year budget about a $750 million hit. Now, again, based on how we see the numbers right now, on the scale of a $254 billion state budget, that would be manageable, right? But as we move past this year, here's the challenge. The budget that was put together, and you know, as I recall us talking about in past shows, you know, the governor and the legislature, probably so, made the decision based on our strong revenue situation to invest in services and programs people care about, education, healthcare. Governor had a high priority on an affordability agenda, tax cut for the middle class, expansion of the child tax credit, rebate checks that some folks are going to qualify for this fall. But that budget, before we even talk about the federal cuts and the impact of the changes coming out of Washington, had out-year budget gaps, David, that accumulate to about $34 billion. So the challenge is an obvious one. As the full impact of the federal cuts come in over time, because the cuts don't happen all at once. That's part of the deviousness of how they did it, right? The pain is not going to be felt right away. It's going to have an impact on what already is a challenging budget structure in terms of the out-year gaps. And I think it's fair to say there's uncertainty about this economy. We see job growth slowing nationally and in New York State. Will that trend hold up? We see the stock market, which I'm pleased about from the perspective of our pension fund investments and the taxes we get when Wall Street does well, seems to be doing very well. Many people feel too well. Is it overheated? Will there be a correction or worse? We don't know. So you take the uncertainty of the economy and the markets, couple that with what is really not just cuts, it's really a fundamental restructuring of the federal-state relationship and what that will mean in terms of loss of federal dollars coming to New York. While I think we're okay today, I'm very concerned about where we're going to be next year.
Yeah, and that's got to keep you up at night a little bit, Tom DiNapoli, comptroller of the state of New York, because these are looming problems which will be better handled if they're handled sooner.
Absolutely. You know, and to a certain extent, I had said when the budget was being worked on, I would have liked to have seen some more contingencies built in. You know, it's true our statutory reserves are higher than they've ever been, and that's good news. And you know, for years now, you know, as controller, I've been calling for a greater putting aside money in the reserves. But the reserves in and of themselves are not going to be enough to deal with the impact of the cuts. You know, so, you know, particularly on the healthcare side, the Medicaid program, you know, you're talking about billions of dollars of cuts. And you know, 35 to 40% of any given year state budget is federal funds. So when the federal funds are being cut, whether that's on healthcare, education, or energy programs, go down the list, it has an impact on the overall state budget. And of course, because much of the state budget, David, as you know, goes to localities, goes to counties, cities, towns, sure, villages, school districts. You know, there's a potential for a ripple effect that's very, very concerning. And you know, I'm talking numbers, I'm talking budgets, but what's the human impact? You know, just take the healthcare cuts alone. New York, and you've heard me talk about it on the show before, and you're listening to heard me talk about it. You know, we've done a great job compared to other states of really building on Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, the Essential Plan, the expansion of Medicaid. You know, if we were doing this show with Alan a number of years ago, we were talking about 10% of our population not having health care coverage. Well, now we're down to less than 5% of our population in New York without health care coverage. We're one of the states that have really taken full advantage of the changes. Now, with these cuts, it's going to go in the opposite direction. You know, he's basically been gutting the essential plan on the federal subsidies there. The governor has asked for a correction on the waiver to move some of those folks who are going to potentially lose health care coverage. It was estimated to be about 1.5 million New Yorkers, by the way, would lose health care coverage. Move them onto basic Medicaid. That will help some, but it's probably still going to be estimated about 450,000 New Yorkers that have health care coverage today won't have it.
Well, what is that going to mean? Tom, I talked to the Republicans and they act as if we're not cutting anything. We're making it right. We're taking away those that are getting it that don't deserve it.
Well, I would beg to differ because, you know, the reality is these are New Yorkers and they're still going to need health care. What it's going to mean is that they're going to show up at the hospital emergency room as their doctor's office. Still going to cost money for everybody else. And whether you're looking at health care or you look at the nutrition program, SNAP, what we used to call food stamps, the cuts there as well. And it's so important to point out with many of the changes, whether we're talking about the health care changes or anything on the social safety net where they're restructuring this relationship and resulting in less money.
SNAP.
It's not only cuts, it's also new administrative requirements and burdens that are going to cost money to oversee the programs. So it's really a double hit in many cases.
Not to mention,
it's still going to take us time to sort out what the full fiscal impact is going to be, and even more so the human impact.
Yeah, not to mention I've seen a number of stories about the people there. You know, you're talking about people who, you know, don't have a lot, maybe not have a lot of education in some cases, and you're asking them to fill out one piece of paperwork after another. You know, a lot of them give up. They don't even continue to try to apply for it because of the complications involved.
Well, don't you think that's part of the purpose, right? Discourage people. Yeah, whether that's SNAP or unemployment insurance, you know, some of the opportunities for people really to not fall, between the cracks. There's a lot of meanness in this approach. You know, let's also, you know, keep in mind that we have a number of our state agencies that have their employees, their workforce, right, tied to federal funding. So you take an agency like Department of Labor, which at the state level has a big role in administering the unemployment insurance program. They have like over 80% of their positions are funded by federal funds. Office of the Aging, over 60%. Department of Health, 25%. State Education, 42%. So you're talking about potential of state workers providing important services not being funded. Now, here's the question. Will the state be able to pick up the slack and backstop this funding?
I'm guessing no.
Maybe in some cases, but across the board, no. You know, because, you know, I try to point out to people this is not just a question of cuts. This is a fundamental restructuring of the federal-state relationship. We have moved from being a state that was a net giver to Washington in terms of tax revenues versus what we get back to getting more money back from Washington. That reversed a trend that had existed for a long time. And I had said a while ago, you know, at some point after the COVID relief money would be spent down, we'd probably go back to maybe being a slight donor state. Well, this is going to accelerate that trend. So I don't see any great advantage to New York, certainly in terms of our finances, and certainly in terms of impact on New York's population. Now, local governments also, depending, some of them also get federal funds, right? So that's going to affect some of the local governments as well. And again, are these services going to disappear? I don't know. Maybe some of them will. But for sure, knowing New York, we're going to try to backstop as much as we can. I also have to say this, David. We talk about our audits all the time right on your show. There are opportunities for us to spend our money a bit more wisely than we have. Medicaid is a prime example. Very expensive program, very important in terms of health care. But as you know from our audits repeatedly, we find opportunities where, with greater supervision of how the program is administered through the Department of Health, money could be saved without hurting people or denying services. You know, inappropriate billing, people placed on Medicaid that should be on Medicare. You know, I mean, you go down the long list of what our audits often find. If there is any silver lining, and I don't see much of a silver lining, maybe it'll get folks to take a little more seriously the kind of audit recommendations we've made, because we do have to be smarter about how we're spending our money, because we're going to have less of it coming from Washington.
Well, it'd be nice if your audits had any enforcement.
Well, we've talked about that, right?
Yeah.
You know, people say all the time, well, you know, you said X, Y, Z. We don't have enforcement power. I don't know that anybody would ever give it to us, but the recommendations are thoughtful. Our auditors are professional. And, you know, look, I can't say that every agency dismisses them. In fact, some agencies embrace them. We're putting out an audit probably as we're speaking on the Thruway Authority, where
That's
we
right.
had some suggestions, criticism, if you will, about how they were dealing with unpaid tolls. And you know what? They took our we did a follow-up audit. So this is what we do. We can't enforce. We can do a follow-up audit. So in the case of Thruway Authority, we did a follow-up audit. And you know what? They implemented a number of our recommendations, and they're doing a much better job of accurately charging users of the system and collecting unpaid tolls. So our audits can have a positive effect, and I just hope the agencies that we do audit, obviously we're talking about state agencies, but the same is true for our local governments as well, implement our suggestions. That's a good way to be more efficient and to save taxpayer money.
Well, Tom DiNapoli, State Comptroller of New York, of course, a Democrat. Well, I want to go back for a second, because you mentioned that tax collections came in higher than projected. What accounts for that?
Strong personal income tax collections. Also, sales taxes, we've been reporting, continue to be up. So that's a positive sign. Keep in mind, for state revenue, the prime driver is the personal income tax. And fortunately, because unemployment has been low, that's been a sign of the fact that folks are gainfully employed, and that's been a very strong positive. That being said, you know, there's concern not just about the economy, but there is that issue of taxpayer migration. You know, we do have an outflow of taxpayers. It really accelerated during COVID. Fortunately, that spike has abated. But, you know, that's why when we talk about tax policy in the state, it's always something, to keep in mind that we are a high tax state. I mean, nobody can deny that, and we don't want to see a continued migration of especially personal income tax. Some of the folks that carry a big share of that tax revenue. So, be mindful of that. It's that delicate balancing act of, right, what's the appropriate level of spending, what's the appropriate level of taxation, and I think, you know, those kinds of questions are going to be center stage as the budget negotiations, kick off for next year. Keep in mind, we're already into the fall. The quick start budget process for our state begins in November, where we start putting out, both from the legislature and the governor, and from the controller's office, what our projections are as far as revenue. And before you know it, we'll be into January. The governor will have her executive budget proposal. But I think it's going to be a more challenging budget negotiation this coming year than we've seen in the past couple of years, because the need for services is as strong as ever. The federal support is going to start to diminish significantly, and how we balance all that out going to be a challenge. And of course, next year's an election year on top of it for all the legislators and all the statewide officials,
including you.
Yep.
And that's probably a good time to bring in the fact, Tom, that you do have a challenger this time around, a man named Drew Warshaw, who is challenging you. And on his website says, what will he do differently than you, Tom? I'll throw just a couple of things at you. Tax cut for working New Yorkers paid for by Wall Street, he says. Drew will stop lining Wall Street's pockets and invest smarter to give billions back to working New Yorkers. Create the largest affordable housing fund in the United States and give back the $20 billion that belongs to New Yorkers in the unclaimed fund. Well, I would just say one thing about that. We talk about the unclaimed funds all the time, and there is a lot of access to that, and I believe you are trying to get it out to people faster.
Yeah, and we've had a success. You know, we've updated the program both in terms of the computer software that runs the program, make it more efficient. And we have, starting this year, a new initiative where for any new accounts, $250 or less, normally, as you know, because we've talked about it on the show many times, we have all this outreach to remind people about the program,
yep.
Have them come to us, or we will send a letter. Now we will, if we could be sure of who the person is, validate the identity. We'll actually send the check directly. So we had some people calling saying, is this a scam? Is this real?
Yeah,
so
right.
I say to you, listen, if you get a check, from us and it says it's for unclaimed funds, it's real. Cash it. Don't discard it. So, we're returning now, $2 million a day. The challenge is the obvious one. More money comes in, right? Some of these accounts become dormant and gift cards aren't spent. Certain checks aren't cashed.
Now, soaking Wall Street? What about that?
I don't know what he's talking about. I mean, part of the problem is, and I haven't spent a lot of time reading his platform. I have a day job, right? But some of the stuff that I hear just seems to be not well thought out, pretty fanciful, quite frankly. So, we manage the pension fund in a very, very responsible way. And part of our diversified portfolio is to do some private market investments. And when you do those investments, you do work with investment professionals, and there are some fees attached to that. But we have gotten solid returns. He's, from what I gather, again, I'm not spending a lot of time on his rhetoric. We have a very strong pension fund. We do a great job in terms of our investment returns. We have a conservative long-term goal that positions the fund better. We are consistently one of the best funded pension plans in the country, so we could ensure that retirement security for the members of the plan. A lot of them live in the capital region and in your listenership. So while a great deal of what we do is managed in-house, very low to no fee, we do pay some fees, but we're no different than any other large fund. David, we're a $280 billion fund. So part of that is going to be in private markets. And if you want to go to quality investment professionals, there is going to be a fee attached to it. But if you get a good return back, well, that's how we ensure retirement security. I don't want to put all of our money in U.S. Treasuries because that will not make the pension fund sustainable. I don't want to put all the money in the stock market and just let it ride, because when the market is up, everybody says put more money in stocks. And when the market goes down, as it does periodically, then everybody says, why'd you put all that money at risk? Well, that's why you have a diversified portfolio. That's what people do with their personal finances as well. You don't put all your eggs in one basket. So he's, I think, trying to seize on one part of the portfolio and say, well, we're not going to do that anymore, and that's going to be a tax cut. The controller's office doesn't set tax policy for the state. So I think it's a very fanciful notion, trying to seize on a slogan that doesn't have much merit behind it. But, David, we have many months before the campaign really kicks up in high gear.
Yep.
And I'm sure we're going to have many times to set the record straight. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but I appreciate you're willing to answer the question. And,
sure.
You've got a challenger. You step up to the plate. I appreciate that. Well, and, you talked about investments. There has been some worry about your investments directly dealing with purchasing of Israel bonds for the New York State's Common Retirement Fund. I received a letter, I'll be honest with you, from Jewish Voice for Peace. That's an anti-Zionist group. And they're concerned about the state's investments in Israel based on what's happening now with Gaza.
Well, I would just say on Gaza, I think everybody certainly would like to see an end to what's happening there. I'd like to think everybody would like to see all the hostages returned. I'd like to believe everybody condemns what happened on October 7th, the massacre that happened against the Israelis, which triggered a lot of what we're witnessing now. So obviously, this is something that the world is focused on, and we need to see peace. In terms of the investment, it's a different question, I think. Our pension fund has a decades-long history of purchase of Israel bonds. Why? Because it's been a safe, reliable return, part of our fixed income portfolio. It is not an endorsement of any particular administration. You know which government entity we have the largest holdings in?
Where?
In the many billions. U.S. That's not an endorsement of Donald Trump by any means. But that's not the purpose of what we do. So I think to conflate an investment with an endorsement of a policy or a particular administration is wrong, quite frankly. So that has been a positive relationship of long standing, and I don't anticipate that relationship changing.
I would just throw out that you've taken these questions before with investments in fossil fuel companies.
Sure. And, you know, again, we were the first public pension fund in the country to have a climate action plan. We've reduced our exposure as far as fossil fuels. Are we out of every single fossil fuel company? No, because at the end of the day, here's the challenge that I have. I can't manage the pension fund just on the politics of what's popular, not popular, what my politics are. I have a responsibility to the 1.2 million New Yorkers, the public employees across our state, the retirees, their beneficiaries. I have to balance, you know, we always want our money to be doing good things, for sure. But I also have to balance that we have to get a return that will secure retirement. So for all of these New Yorkers that depend on these decisions. So the pension fund is not, you know, my personal fund to use my political judgment and my political decisions. But particularly with regard to companies, we mentioned climate on so many other issues, you know, as we've talked about on your show. We engage with companies all the time on workforce issues, how they're treating their employees, what are they doing to ensure there's no discrimination based on race or gender or sexual orientation, how are employees being treated from the perspective of employees that want to organize, be in a labor union, having labor standards, with our investments, executive compensation, how are they managing that? You know, we're concerned about Elon Musk and what's happening at Tesla, right? Some people say, oh, we don't like Elon Musk. You should sell all your Tesla. Well, you know, we're not just going to buy and sell based on who we're mad at any given moment. But we have been engaging with Tesla and really questioning, you know, Musk's role there. And I think being engaged with companies, in terms of making sure they have a good corporate culture, I think that's been an important responsibility in terms of what we've done. So, there's a lot that we have in managing that $280 billion fund. But at the end of the day, we balance all of the questions that come up and say, how are we going to be sure that we get our investment return? How do we make our numbers to make sure that that pension check will be there? It can't be used as a political football. We try our best to be a responsible investor, but at the end of the day, we are trying to strike the right balance. Look, if I could put everything in a savings account and say nobody could question anything, I'd do it, but that's not going to work. We won't be able to afford the pensions then, so we have to make some of these tougher calls on how we're managing the money.
Speaking of managing the money, the MTA, right? We've talked about that before. And one of the ideas was congestion pricing. Anecdotally, I've heard some good news on how that's working. Do you have any sense, monetary-wise, what's happening?
The money has been coming in at or higher than projected. So that obviously was a key part of doing it. You know, the question of whether congestion is being relieved in the city. Some have observed that it has helped on the congestion front. Others say they don't see it. I'll leave that to others to evaluate. But in terms of the revenue, yes, it's been coming in. But that's why, you know, from the perspective that we have on the MTA, it's so important that they put that money, because it's funded the capital plan. They must deploy their projects that they have lined up for the capital plan. They must show those who are paying for that congestion pricing, for that higher toll, that in fact there is a benefit to the system. They're upgrading the trains. We're getting new rolling stock. We're getting more, you know, new subway cars, new trains, you know, for Long Island Railroad and Metro North, that there's improvement in the stations, that there's implementation of the goals to have access for people with disabilities. We are dealing with the delayed projects on building in resilience to deal with the climate change issue. You go down the long list of their very ambitious capital plan. What we've said to MTA leadership is, got the money. Now show that you're spending it and spending it wisely so that people see a return on the money that they are putting in. And hopefully that will result in ridership continuing to go up. You know, the MTA, David, is very dependent on toll and fare revenue. So people have to feel that it's a reliable system with good service, clean service. Another issue, obviously, is safety.
Safe, as well.
Safety continues to be a concern. That's a little bit more than just the MTA. As you know, there have been a lot of steps taken by NYPD, and the governor has had state police play a role. So, you know, they're getting there, but we keep our oversight of the MTA. Pardon the expression, but we want to be sure the MTA stays on track with fulfilling what they've put out there as their goals with their capital plan now that they have the funding. By the way, that is another area where there could be some federal funding that will be at risk. So I would have to add that as well in terms of federal, how they handle mass transit. So we have to keep an eye on that as well.
All right. One last question. It has to do with industrial development agencies. I see you released a report on that. You know, I've talked to Senator Skoufis. He's a Democrat, and he gets hot over these industrial development agencies.
Well,
he's not like them.
He's had a particular challenge in his own
country. He sure has.
And we've done some work there as well, and we have certainly found some issues there.
So what does your report say?
Well, I mean, we track the number of projects, you know, and we do see job creation. It is happening. So we take the public authority reporting system data, and we do this annual report. The data is based on what's self-reported by the IDA, so it's important for me to point out, so when people go to our website and they look at that report. But separate from that, we also do audits of individual IDAs. And one of the things that we look at particularly is if they have a situation where, let's say they give tax breaks to a project and the job creation that was promised doesn't happen, do they have clawback provision? That's something we've seriously recommended many times. They really should have the opportunity, if the jobs aren't created as we're promised. By clawback, I mean take back the tax breaks that were given, give it to another project that, in fact, will create those jobs.
And
those
we've seen this over and over again, Tom.
Sure. So we'll continue our audits of individual IDAs, but to your listeners, if they want to see statewide what's happening, go to our website and you'll see the annual IDA report that we put out.
He is the state comptroller of New York, Tom DiNapoli, a Democrat. So thankful that you're willing to come on the Capital Connection and talk about all things fiscal when it comes to New York State. And you know I'm asking you again, so I hope you'll come back.
I look forward to it, David. Always great to be with you.
You too. Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.